We have two cases set this afternoon for oral submission, and you all are obviously first up. Your panel today is Visiting Justice Rebecca Simmons. I'm Sue Walker, and this is Elizabeth Kerr. So I understand that you all have announced the time you need to argue with our clerk, and if you're ready to proceed, our clerk will call the first case. Are you all ready?
Yes.
The court will now call Denton Central Appraisal District versus Richard Scott Flatton. May it please the court, Mr. Christopher F. Jackson will argue for the appellant. Mr. Flatton, Richard Flatton will argue for the appellee.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, counsel. Again, I'm Chris Jackson. To my left is Dylan Wood, and to his left in the gallery in the Navy blazer is Mr. George Clarihue. He is the Deputy Chief Appraiser for the Denton CAD. The questions that this court is asked to answer are, first, when does the limitation or the 10% cap in Tax Code Section 2323 take effect on Mr. Gladden's property? The second question is, what years and what issues does the court have jurisdiction over? I'd like to address the first question first. The district contends in our brief and below at the trial court that the courts need to look at and harmonize three statutes, and I'd like to analogize those to a house. The roof or the ceiling is Tax Code Section 2323, the 10% cap or limitation, because that is the main ultimate issue we're here for today. But Section 2323 also references Tax Code Section 1113, the residential homestead exemption. I'd like to analogize those as the walls, because that is what supports the ceiling. But we think that the most important piece of this hypothetical house is the foundation, Tax Code Section 1142A. And that is because that tells you the date when one qualifies for the homestead exemption. We address this ad nauseum in our briefing and below. Mr. Gladden just basically, in our opinion, fails to recognize it. In Bader versus Dallas Central Appraisal District, 139 Southwest 3rd 778, at pages 782 and 783, the Dallas Court of Appeals held that one needs to construe Section 2323 and 1113 together. We don't believe that it's a great leap to then look at 1142 and construe all three of those together. Mr. Gladden has contended that he qualified for the residential homestead exemption when he owned and commenced occupying the property on May 5th, 2012. We're not sure if Mr. Gladden or the trial court conflated having a homestead with a homestead exemption under the property tax code.
Well, really, aren't they two separate things?
Indeed, they are, Your Honor.
I mean, Chapter 23 or Section 23 is dealing with appraisals, and I think is even titled appraisal methods, whereas Chapter 11 or Section 11, it deals with exemptions.
Correct. That is absolutely
so
correct.
So why don't they stand independent of one another?
We would contend because they reference each other, and you also have to figure out when one qualifies.
But where exactly does 1142 or 1113 reference 2323? I mean, where does it say 2323?
In those two sections, they do not specifically reference 2323.
Then how does it reference it?
The other way, we would say 2323 references 1113, and in order to figure out 1113, one must look to 1142A.
Okay.
So I guess back to where I was. We're not sure if the trial court or Mr. Gladden is conflating the homestead under the property code with a homestead exemption and the property tax code. And as this court has said in Hudson versus Tri-City Properties at 240 Southwest 3rd 44, those two are two distinct things. With 1142A, a person who does not qualify for an exemption on January 1 of any year. If they're not qualifying, they don't get that exemption at all. January 1 is the eligibility and qualification date. And why is January 1st important? You have to refer to other sections in the tax code. Tax code section 3201A holds that the January 1st date a tax lien of the taxing unit attaches to the property, and under tax code section 3207A, property taxes become the obligation of the January 1 owner. So that is why you must look to the January 1 date.
But again, those are tax exemptions and tax payments. Why does not the 10% appraisal method stand independent of those?
It's part of the tax code scheme or system. The appraisal district appraises the property at market value every year. Then one takes into consideration, the appraisal district takes into consideration any exemptions that are available to property owners. And then you also look at whether there are any other avenues to reduce the appraised value for tax purposes by the taxing units.
Mm-hmm. One thing that concerns me that makes it seem like they stand independent, which you kind of just hit on right there, is that the district appraisal authority appraises the value of the residence, homestead, the whatever it's qualified as. And section 2323, subsection A, says regardless of whether the appraisal office has appraised the property and determined the market value of the property for the tax year, an appraisal office may increase the appraised value of a resident's homestead for a tax year to an amount not to exceed the lesser of. So it looks like that notwithstanding the requirements of 2518 and regardless of whether the appraisal office has appraised the property and determined the market value of the property for the tax year, it's still capped at 10%. Why is that not a different kind of accrual date than the January 1st exemption accrual date?
Under the tax code, appraisal districts must reappraise property at their market value at least once every 3 years. Most appraisal districts do it every year in order to have properties at market value for their taxing units.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay, so you're saying, okay, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So, again, we think that the court needs to construe all three of these statutes sections together in order to come up with what we'll call the foundational answer. When is the qualification date, Mr. Glad's property, for the homestead exemption? Our response is that is January 1st, 2013. And then you look to 2323C, and it says the January 1 following January 1 of the tax year following the first tax year, the owner qualifies the property for an exemption under 1113. First leg component is qualification under 1113. Our position is that's January 1, 2013. The next January 1 would be January 1, 2014, and that's when the 10% cap would take effect. If the court decides that we're off, we don't have it right, they shouldn't have to read these three sections together, I think the court could still consider the text just of section 2323. If Mr. Gladden's interpretation of the phrase following the first tax year in tax code section 2323C is followed, we believe that that basically just takes that out and treats it as surplusage, and we believe that that would render the statute meaningless. The plain language of following the first tax year in 2323C shows that there is a period of time between the homestead exemption qualification and getting your 10% cap, and the legislature chose those words with care. And we haven't emphasized it in our briefing, but Amicus Harris CAD did. If you continue on to we've been in this scrum of what does this first sentence in 2323C mean. If you look to the very next sentence, it basically says the limitation expires on January 1 of the first tax year that neither the owner of the property when the limitation took effect or their spouse qualifies for the exemption. So again, in the next sentence, the legislature has provided that there is a gap or a period. The prior owner's 10% cap rolls off. There's a time period where there is none, and the succeeding property owner then gets theirs the following January 1. Under Mr. Gladden's interpretation of the statute, this wouldn't have any effect, and he would get the benefit of the prior owner's cap immediately the next following January 1.
So I guess in a time of rising market values, the worst time to buy a house would be January 2nd of any year, under your interpretation of all this?
That would not be an ideal time, Your Honor. December 30th, 31st would probably be the better time to buy.
So remind me, let me just go walk through. Okay, so January 1st, we have the eligibility and qualification of the exemptions. We determine that. The appraised value, when do you all send out here? When you determine the appraised value, you send out those notices when?
Those are sent out typically in April for homesteads.
And then payment is due when?
By February 1st of the succeeding year. And market value, again, is determined on January 1 as well.
Right.
So again, January 1 is the key date. That's the date myself here. That's when you take the proverbial Polaroid picture and you see what's going on and you make all the determinations for property tax for that property owner for that year. I referenced in our brief, while we recognize that it is inappropriate to use extrinsic aids when a statute is unambiguous, we wanted to point out the clarity of the text we felt was confirmed by the legislative history. Nowhere in the legislative history is there any mention that the cap applies to new homeowners in the first year of ownership. We also referenced what the comptroller is doing and what they have in their manuals. The comptroller is reading the statute, and again, you will have the say on this, but the comptroller has been reading these statutes for years and has the same position that we're presenting to you today. There are several appraisal districts out there that take the statute, what the comptroller is saying, and they're applying the statute in the manner we're presenting to you today as well. Harris CAD, being the largest one in the state, has several items on their website. They have helpful videos, which we presented links to in our briefing, that again show this is what appraisal districts are doing. This is not something where the Denton appraisal district went rogue and did something to hurt a particular property owner. This has been the consistent approach in the property tax system for years since this statute was implemented. We also feel, Amicus Harris CAD pointed out the potential absurd results if the court construes the statute as Mr. Gladden advocates. Harris CAD in the Amicus brief noted that several different types of residential property owners would be treated unequally if this interpretation is upheld. Taxing units in Texas could potentially lose billions of dollars from their tax rolls. Harris CAD pointed out in 2016 that number would be $31.7 billion, which they referenced from the comptroller's website. And other taxpayers would have to make up that shortfall. It would be businesses that would have to make that up, and the state of Texas would have to come up with more money for certain school districts. If the court rules for Mr. Gladden and this position takes effect throughout the state. I'd like to move next to, unless the court has any other questions regarding 2323, I'll move on to other things. Just real quickly, Mr. Gladden has sued for the 2013 tax year, 2014, 15, 16, and 17. We believe that he has a right to pursue relief under the tax code for the 2013 tax year only. We believe, and in our briefing, we have argument that his claims under the UDJA are not applicable because his exclusive remedies were available under the tax code. This court in the City of Fort Worth versus Pastusic Industries, the Texas Supreme Court in Cameron versus Rourke, MHCB Leasing versus Galveston ARB, all in our brief, say that you need to look to the tax code for your remedies. The court lacks jurisdiction to provide relief when the tax code is available.
So let me ask you one thing, because it kind of came up and I was looking through the briefs, and it would be difficult for me to understand exactly how he was to preserve his claims as to those following tax years. So he applied and did the correct thing in his appeal on the 2013 tax year, right?
Correct.
But then these other tax years come up, and they fall dependent upon what that cap situation is. They could literally change, right?
Correct.
How is he supposed to preserve those?
He is supposed to protest every April, May 15th, every year. Once he protests, he goes to the ARB.
What is that protest? He only gets, you know, you can argue about market value, you can argue about it's unequal. What is it the application of the exemption that he's protesting? Which box would he click?
Usually there's another box, or there's a box for action taken by the chief appraiser that negatively impacts the property owner. That's 4141A9.
Okay. So it would just be the more the generic sort of other sort of bad impact.
Other fill in the blank.
Right. And so he could have done then different, he could have protested the market value as well as do that one as well, and that's how he was supposed to?
Correct. You could check every box, you can check a couple, but he would need to check certainly.
And then he would need to file another lawsuit, right? Is that right?
He could amend this lawsuit, or he could file a brand new one for each tax year.
Okay.
My time's up, so thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. I think for all the complicating arguments that have been made, including perhaps by myself more complicated than they needed to be, the question in this case is when someone qualifies a property, or when a property is qualified under the constitutional provision, which in turn has the enabling provision that was enacted at the same time, that's 1113. And once you establish that, you necessarily establish when someone or when a property is qualified under 2323 because it cross-references section 1113. The difference or the dispute between the parties, the primary dispute is that under the constitutional provision and under 1113, they use identical language. They say it's the January 1st, next after the property is qualified. And then in both the constitutional provision as well as I think in 1113, it sets out a person needs to own it, they need to occupy it, they need to treat it as their residence, etc. The difference, and of course in this case, the appraisal district in Denton said that I qualified the property in May of 2012 by doing the things required under 1113. But for reason they still haven't explained, they think that exact same phrase means something different in 2323, that it means not when the property is qualified, it's when the appraisal district determines someone's qualified. And so you're going to have to, their argument is you should treat that identical phrase in both 2323 and 1113 and in the constitutional provision to mean qualification means when you move in and own the property for purposes of the homestead exemption, but that the identical phrase means something else when you get to the homestead cap in 2323. And so basically they are inserting some kind of argument that is implicit under 2323 that it's not when the property is qualified, it's when the appraisal district determines the following January 1st after it's been qualified that they will apply the exemption, that the qualifications are valid, more or less. I tend to agree with them. If you're going to treat 2323 in paramateria with the constitutional provision as well as section 1113, those provisions are going to have to mean the same thing, but they're not saying that they mean the same thing. They're saying that you qualify in May of 2012 for the homestead exemption, but it's the January 1st after the next January 1st, because it's really the next January 1st after the January 1st that the appraisal district determines for the cap, but not the homestead exemption, that it's been qualified. we talk a little bit about, I think both sides have talked about, how that language contrasts to other types of exemptions, or caps, actually, for elderly, people over 65. There's a provision that the cap would go into effect immediately if a person over 65 changes a residence. They've got a $100,000 home, they move to a $200,000 home. There's a provision that when they move to that home, they actually, the cap goes with them from the preceding home. That's why it applies during, effective immediately, for that apportionment of the year that they've owned their new home.
But wouldn't that suggest that the legislature knows how to differentiate between these different exemptions?
Yeah, and I think they did. And, of course, if you look at the constitutional provision was ratified, or it was approved, the resolution was in the same term, both in 1997 and then again in 2007. By the same legislature that adopted or enacted the enabling statute, which in this case would be 1113. And the difference between the two is in 97, they allowed for an appraisal to occur every 3 years, and they limited the average increase. So if you only got an appraisal every 3 years, it couldn't be more than 10% each year. But then homeowners were getting 30% increases that affected their budgets and everything else. So they amended the Constitution and another enabling statute again in 2007 to say it's the preceding tax year, it's the fair market value that counts for the last time it was appraised. And that certainly created incentive for these appraisal districts to go appraise every year, because otherwise they wouldn't get the 30% at the end of 3 years. They would only get 10%. And, of course, in the legislative history, there's discussion about sticker shock. And believe me, I got some sticker shock when my property value went, and I paid that first year. I moved in May, and I paid for that proportional property taxes in 2012.
You've had a question I'm interested in. So in this case, then, in 2012, who had, as of January 1, 2012, who had the homestead exemption?
It was a new home, and there was no homestead cap. And I would talk about the argument they've incorporated from the amicus. The existence of a homestead cap from a prior owner is irrelevant.
I'm just curious.
I understand, but I want to make sure this is clear, independent of your question. There was a home builder, mm-hmm. Okay? There was no resident owner, so there was no homestead. There was no homestead cap.
Okay.
But the argument made by the amicus is just fundamentally flawed, because they are arguing that I would somehow be able to piggyback a homestead cap that was enjoyed by a prior owner. That's not the way the homestead cap works. It's based on the fair market value appraisal for the preceding year. And that does not take into account anybody having a cap or not having a cap. It's the fair market value. The same argument the amicus makes, that, well, what if it was appraised as an inventory and not fair market value? Well, the fact that it might be appraised for a different amount for inventory purposes would not preclude the appraisal district from looking at what the fair market value was on the sale of the home. See what I'm saying?
I do, but let's go back.
Okay.
Okay, so let's say we have Party A, just a normal transaction. Party A owns a house from, you know, say 2010.
Sure.
Till mid-2012.
Right.
Who has the exemption on January 1, 2012?
That's correct.
Party A, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Party B then buys it in June, let's say.
Right.
Okay. And so January 1, and they move in January 1, 2013.
Right.
They then are recognized as having that exemption.
Okay. Are they moving in June? Or are they
June.
Okay. Right.
Moved in June. So
right.
They have the homestead exemption, correct?
Yes. And they've agreed that I do.
Right. Right. Okay. So.
But because the property qualified when I moved in.
Right. And they determined that that was the exemption that was applicable to that property.
Right,
correct?
Under 1113.
Okay. So now I'm trying to understand. So when we look at 2323, and it talks about tax years, right? That the owner is qualified.
Right.
Who is it in 2012?
It's okay. It would apply to the, well, actually in this case there wouldn't be one, because it has not been established as a homestead or any cap being applied.
I'm saying, my example, who would it be, A or Party B that picked up in June.
Nada. And I paid the full fair market value, my apportionment from May to December 31st of that 2012 tax year. And so there was no cap in 2012. I'm not asking for a cap in 2012. Mm-hmm. But under the language of both 1113 and the constitutional provision and 2323, the January next, after I qualified the property, both for homestead purposes and for the cap purposes, was when I moved in May of 2012. And in your example, that would go into effect for both, not just the homestead exemption, on the next January 1st after I qualified it. They are saying no. For one, it means you qualified it for homestead in May of 2012, but the identical language means the January next after the appraisal district on January 1st determines you had validly qualified it. You see what I'm saying? And that's pretty clear. Now, with regard to this comptroller statement, I would distinguish the statement made by the comptroller by what the Harris County Appraisal District says. The comptroller says it applies in the second tax year. All right? Under the definition of tax year, it's a calendar year. So I qualified it in 2012. That's the first tax year. 2013 is the second tax year. That's why I was entitled to it effective January 1st for the 2013 tax year, because that's the second tax year. It's a calendar year.
And it wouldn't matter that you, if in some instance you had a preceding homeowner who had also qualified for the 2012 tax year for their homestead.
No, because the appraisal district has a fair market value, and then apart from that, they have a taxable value that's limited by the cap. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, for example, my property is now appraised at over $500,000 because of this. And I'm not taxed on that $500,000.
Right. No, I'm very familiar with all this. I have been in similar situations.
And what I'm saying is their assertion that I'm piggybacking on a prior cap of some prior owner is wrong, because it goes from the fair market appraisal value, which is greater than any cap that might apply to a prior owner. See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that it might be inventory, fine. But if they've got a fair market value, which in this case they did, that was $220,000 roughly, it goes 10% from that starting January 1st of the next January, or the next January 1st, which is 2013. And there is no support at all for this idea that it means something different for purposes of the homestead entitlement, which is qualifying when you move in and when you are the owner, and then the same identical language means something different when obviously 2323 is referring to 1113, which is the homestead qualification.
Okay, so if the homestead's qualified on January 1 of 2012, and that was not you.
That was not me.
Okay. Well, what is the first tax year when you qualified the property for the exemption? Is that 2013?
No. I qualified when I moved in May of 2012, and the cap went into effect the next January 1st after I qualified it in 2012.
But if it's determined as of January 1, 2012.
We're not talking about determination. We're talking about qualification.
Right.
All right? And so it's not the January 1st after I qualified and then the appraisal district has later determined I qualified. It goes by the constitutional provision and 1113, which is the question, did I qualify in 2012? And that's what's confusing about it, is the appraisal district keeps saying that I'm claiming a cap for 2012, and I'm not claiming a cap for 2012. I'm not claiming I lived there on January 1st, 2012. It's undisputed. They gave me the homestead exemption starting in May that would apply the following January 1st. But for some reason, they think the same wording means something different for purposes of the cap, and there's no statutory basis or legislative history to support it. In fact, the concern of the public that didn't want people to get 30% increases every 3 years would certainly apply in this case, where you've got a 52% increase in a single tax year. And that was the hope. And these two constitutional provisions passed by 2-1. And if there's any public policy arguments to be made, as the amicus attempts to do, it should be put up for a vote maybe in a constitutional amendment. And I don't think it's appropriate for this court to think about the consequences. Obviously, the reason for those two amendments in 1997 in 2007 was to modify the pre-existing provision, is that taxes shall be equally for everybody. Well, the existence of the homestead cap in the Texas Constitution obviously treats different properties differently. And that's discussed in the for and against comments in the House Resource Organization's analysis of both of those constitutional provisions, because without a constitutional amendment, you could not treat properties different, as in this case with a homestead cap. Now, with regard to, unless there's other questions on this issue, I would move to the question about whether or not I, number one, the district court had authority to order a ripple effect from recalculating the 2013 cap, and whether it should, he had authority to have it apply going forward through the following years to, through 2017. At the time that I did the protest in 2013, that went on through the process, and then a final tax roll was issued. As I refer to the case of Handy Hardware Wholesale, which is in the brief, there's limitations on what you can raise to correct a prior tax roll. So if I went in 2014, number one, I couldn't relitigate the error on the tax rolls from 2013 because that wasn't a clerical error. And in addition to that, they did not increase the appraised value, they didn't increase the taxable value, which is different from the appraised value, by more than 10% in relation to the last, what we call erroneous calculation. And so I did not, it would be frivolous, there was no administrative remedy to be had or waived, which is what they're basically saying is that I waived it. They acknowledge that I amended my pleadings to include the remedy to have a requirement that it be recalculated for all those years since I filed the lawsuit. And they're not disputing that. Now, with regard to the chief appraiser being included, the statute itself says that the district court has jurisdiction to order him to do that. I think since I'm required to sue the appraisal district, and I did, any agents of it responsible for that, including the chief appraisal, as stated by the statute, are also subject to orders from that court to enforce its judgment. And they seem to think that I need to sue individually, which I don't, the agents, official agents of the defendant appraisal district. And that's not, the legislature assumed that under Rule 683 of the Texas Rules of Civil Procedure, any judgment against a defendant would also naturally apply to any agents of the defendant. And I see my time is up, unless there's other questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. Justice Simmons, you asked a great question, and Mr. Gladden's response is that the district has conceded or agrees that he qualified for his homestead exemption in 2012. To make clear for the record, we have never agreed or conceded that he qualified for his homestead exemption in May of 2012. We do concede that he applied and qualified for it on January 1, 2013. In the record, pages 34 through 36 of the court record, Mr. Gladden filed his residence homestead application for the 2013 tax year, not the 2012. He filed that in April of 2013. If he believed that he qualified in 2012, he could have applied for it late. You have 1 year after the delinquency date to file a late homestead exemption application. So he could have filed for a 2012 homestead application by January 31st, 2014. He did not do that. In his brief on page 15, he basically says the same thing, that the district concedes that he qualified for it in 2012. He drops a footnote 30, and nowhere in there do we say in our briefing that he qualified in 2012.
Well, he paid taxes in 2012, correct?
He did pay some prorated taxes in 2012, and Justice Simmons made a hypothetical of property owner A, who's owned the house for a few years, sells it in June of 2012. The new property owner will pay taxes the remainder of the year from the point of their purchase. The
Aren't those taxes that the new owner pays subject to an exemption? They don't get a prorated rate based on an exemption?
They will pay taxes on the prior owner's, presuming there was one and it wasn't built, brand new and you move in the middle of the year. The prior owner's homestead carries forward to the end of that calendar year, and then the superseding owner, owner B, would then have to file their own homestead exemption application. It comes off for A at the end of the year, of that calendar year, tax year, and owner B needs to file so they can get it in the next tax year.
So if I'm understanding right, the only reason that somebody would take advantage of this one-year grace period to designate or to ask for the homestead exemption, it would really only work in the case of a new construction where you didn't have a previous owner that was paying taxes on a homestead rate, or am I totally lost here?
I'm not sure I follow your question.
Never mind.
Candid.
As soon as I started it, I realized I didn't either. So.
You need to look to the January 1st date. That's the date that the qualification is. You look at it in 1142A. It says the claimant's qualifications on January 1 are looked at. There are other exemption dates than January 1 and 1142. For example, an E, 100% totally disabled veteran, if I was one and I qualified today, I would get my homestead exemption today and for the remainder of the year. If I was over 65 today was my birthday, I would get it under 1142C going back to January 1. If I was a owner of a cemetery, a charity, a private school, and I qualified today, I would get an exemption, not a homestead one, but I would get an exemption for the remainder of the year. The legislature has clearly laid out the dates where one qualifies in 1142. January 1 is the qualification date. As Justice Simmons noted, Mr. Gladden was not the owner on January 1, 2012. He was on January 1, 2013. He owned it. He resided there. He used his house as his primary residence on 1-1-13. And when you look to 2323C, it says you take the January 1 under 1113, and then you get the 10% capital limitation the following January 1. And that's what we're asking the court to interpret 2323C and this, the answer to the questions we posed to you today. Mr. Gladden also talked about ultra vires. Ultra vires claims are brought against government officers in their official capacity when they act without legal authority or fail to perform ministerial acts. He did not sue the chief appraiser.
You might finish your thought.
He didn't sue the chief appraiser. His avenues for relief were under the tax code, as the Texas Supreme Court has said in Rourke and the number of cases in our brief. That was his avenue of relief, was the tax code.
Thank you. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your arguments presented here today. We very much appreciate them. They were very helpful in this complicated case. Your case is submitted, and you are free to go about your business, and we will remain on the bench while the attorneys in the next case move forward for argument.